You ready?
I'm ready.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Drive Talk podcast powered by Michelin. We're inside today at the roastery at Podium Place, but man, do we both wish we were sat outside.
I know, the sun. Do you know what that is?
I can't remember. It's that big yellow disc in the sky with warmth.
Yeah, it's amazing. We've actually got the aircon in here on because I can feel the heat radiating through this massive double glazed glass. And yeah, it's great to be back at Podium Place. Big shout out their fantastic coffee.
Yeah, we've already had one. It's been a while, actually. I was trying to think the last time you were here, literally just last week.
I was, yep. Yeah, doing something with Porsche GB Motorsports and Michelin.
Very
cool. Because they sponsor their GT3 Carrera Cup program.
Yeah.
So that was cool. But I know you've done many things down here. So,
But you rocked up. I've got to ask you, you rocked up in the Spider RS. My favourite cars I've driven in a long time. What did you think?
I mean, on paper, obviously, that is such a ped dream car.
Yeah.
Being with your history of convertibles, being with the fact you've got a lovely Boxer GTS.
Yeah.
And I also, I'm not a big convertible fan, but I do like the Boxster, the 911 to a certain point, and a few McLarens because they seem to lose very little having their roofs chopped off, which is always a compromise, right? Yeah, you chop the roof off most cars, you're going to lose some rigidity, you're going to gain some weight. But with the Boxer, especially the Spider RS,
you just chuck stuff around, Pat.
Yeah, fine. Pat, just he just doesn't care now, does he? It's like season 2 Drive Talk podcast. Pat's just back there dancing around. I love the car. Long and short of it is, I thought it was just fantastic. It obviously has a few flaws, the roof mechanism being one of them. But let's face it, if you own a Spider RS, you're going to have a handful of other more practical cars that are going to get you through the other 11 and a half months of the UK year.
Yeah, I know. And lots of people, when I put my film up, lots of people said, you know, most owners, the roof will be down all the time. It will be parked in a garage and only come out when it's sunny. I mean, to be fair, once you put the roof up and down a few times, it's not that painful. You can do it in a couple of minutes.
Yep.
But yeah, what a car. And just the visceral nature of that car, the noise it makes, the engagement it gives you as a driver, I think it's one of the best cars Porsche make.
It is. And it's as far as I'm concerned, miles better than the GT4 RS on the road. Miles better.
It's got a better ride, isn't it?
Much better. Which I'm sure on track, the 4RS is going to be quicker and whatever. But as a road car, do you know what? I think I might have even said it in my review, which probably won't come out for weeks because I'm not as efficient as you. I think it is the ultimate road tour car. Oh my goodness. If you're going to Spain for 10 days and you knew the weather was going to be mostly like this, I mean, it's a dream. But yeah, ride quality was the biggest standout for me on that car. But that didn't mean that you lost the control and the support. The body still felt absolutely mega.
Yeah.
Obviously, that engine we're all familiar with, the gearbox. It was nice. It's funny, I recently got my M2 back and I jumped in that for the first time. And the first thing that struck me was, wow, this interior feels old-fashioned because I've been in a lot of modern stuff since. On the past 6 months, and getting into the Boxer, even though it's still current, it's still, you know, a couple of generations old. But is that a bad thing? Not at all. You get beautiful analog dials in front.
Yeah.
You get buttons where you want buttons. No heated seat button in that because it's got the carbon buckets. But you don't. Again, you're only really going to take that out in good weather. It's just refreshing, isn't it? It's like everything you need, as you know very well, because that's what you got in your car.
Yeah,
it's exactly. It's peak. Peak interior, proper cup holders, bang on about them all the time. Love that car. And it's just annoying that Porsche have made another brilliant car that none of us can really afford or get allocation of.
I think, though, I think that just the standard Spider probably delivers 80%, maybe 90% of what that car does. It's only the higher end where, let's face it, a lot of drivers probably wouldn't even tap into that higher end anyway. So if you've got a normal Spider, the roof's a little, it's still a faff, but it's a lot less of a faff. It's, you know, so I think that would be where my money went, I think.
On the normal one.
Yeah.
The normal Spider.
yeah.
The poverty one.
Which, to be fair, would, you know, you couldn't get, when they came out, you had to get an allocation of stuff, but you could get one used now.
Yes. Yeah.
And the prices are coming down, which is, for me, thinking about maybe changing my car,
Wow. Going to a six-seat Porsche.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whoa.
I know. It's okay. A big step, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's different size interior and everything. But yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. I mean, I love them. It made me appreciate. I haven't driven a Boxster for a while. And I know it's a very special one. But I just love the Boxster. I think even in base 718 form, it's still
Need to drive the four pot, mate.
I do.
Drive my four banger, and you'll like it.
Yeah, I think we need to do. We haven't done one for ages.
Yeah.
Now my M2's running. We need to go and do a twin test somewhere.
Okay. Sounds like a plan.
Yeah, definitely.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah.
But I've rocked up in my new long-termer today, which I teased on the last podcast. And it's got six cylinders.
It has.
And a V configuration.
Yeah.
I'm in a Lotus Emira. And it's one of these really weird things. Normally you drive cars lots on the road, and then every now and again you get to drive one on the track. But with the Lotus Emira, I've only driven it on the track until I picked it up on Monday this week.
And how are you finding it?
What a car.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not without its faults, but as a road car, I think it makes more sense as a road car than it does on track, actually. Because it's got, you drove one in Australia, right?
The
six-speed manual it takes quite a bit of working into it to understand it, so you don't do a Joe.
I was going to say, do you need any tips for that?
And I think I've not driven it a great deal. I've had it like 4 days. The manual is lovely. The clutch and the, just to do things like hill and towing, I think I've got my head around that now. I haven't got my special driving shoes on today, but I notice you've got your clown shoes on. I mean, how can you possibly take the Mickey out of me? What are they? I bet they cost loads of money as well, don't they?
Well, they are. They're very.
Here we go. He's going to justify them now.
No, I'm not.
There's some special Nike baseball.
No, they're very unreal.
Porsche,
to be honest.
Spider RS.
When matching. I was out in Vegas a month ago, or whatever it was, probably longer now, 6 weeks ago. I went into one of their many incredible trainer shops. And when I say incredible, I mean, wow.
Sorry, sneakers.
Sneakers. Yeah. And there was this one shop, I can't remember what it was called, but they had a designated Jordan section. And literally there was a wall the size of Podium Place, like the size of the whole canteen, just with Jordan Air Jordans.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh. And I thought, I'm here in Vegas. I've got to buy something. So I looked at the t-shirts first and I was like, oh my goodness, they're expensive. What are the trainers going to be like? And ended up buying a t-shirt, which I still haven't worn, a Jordan t-shirt. And then I saw these. I thought, you know what? I think they weren't astronomical. They're about £130 or £140.
Yeah.
Not cheap. But at the same time, I was like, oh, I've got something that, memorabilia. And I was there with the wonderful Ebony. An Alpina B3S. Lovely. The wonderful Ebony, who is James's Michelin equivalent in Australia. She was over there with a couple of people from Oz. So we kind of went sort of trainer shopping together.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Talking about pointing out the window, because we just had that lovely Alpina go past.
Yes.
There's a bit of you parked right next to us there.
There is. And it looks like it's being properly used, doesn't it?
Yeah.
A 1250 GS, sorry. Yeah, trophy. So the big one with a big tank. It's a proper travelling spec one.
Isn't it about time you got one of them?
Well, it's funny you say that. So
what have you done?
Not that I can, number one, really afford or justify to have a bike, because I've discovered in the 18 months of having my license that having a motorbike in the UK is a real luxury. I think countries like Japan, where you've just been, busy cities, places in Italy, even Portimao, Portugal and stuff, where the climate's better, people use bikes as their everyday tool. So they use them to commute on, they use them for, as a proper daily, if you like. Whereas in the UK, we don't have the climate. And what I've discovered is most motorcycle owners have it as like it's like a summer, it's a toy.
Sunday fun day.
It's a Sunday fun day. It's an accessory. Of course, there are people that commute with them as well, but the majority of...
They're quite hardcore if you commute on a bike in the UK.
Exactly. Can you imagine? So I've discovered that first. And secondly, I went to go and test ride a 1300 GS for my good mate Andrew. And Absolutely love it. I knew I would because it's the newer, sportier version of that.
Yeah.
But finance deals, although it was a 22 grand bike, the one I was looking at. Yeah, 22 grand.
Wow.
And that wasn't even fully spec'd. That was just nicely spec'd.
I remember when bikes were like 6 grand.
I know.
A Ducati that was really expensive was maybe 10.
Yeah, and that was probably only 10 years ago. Yeah, like for
22 grand.
22 grand for an adventure bike. But when you break, because the residuals are quite good, when you break it down, the actual monthlies aren't horrendous. It was about working out about 200 quid a month, which I thought, okay, I could justify that. Bear in mind, it's going to be sitting in the garage for 8 months of the year, probably.
Yeah.
Taking up a lot of space. But anyway, so I thought, okay, you know what? Let's just be silly. I love bikes. I want to keep going on that game. I'm not like so many other YouTubers have gone and bought a bike and just forgotten about it, or gone and just made a bike video, got into bikes.
Then who are you thinking of there, mate?
There's a couple, but yeah. So I do genuinely love them, and I can't wait to be on them. But anyway, so what was the thing that stopped me doing it? Literally in my steps. Well, when I got home that night after I'd almost signed on the dotted line that day, I thought I'll just go home and check insurance. And I know we talked a lot about rising car insurance on here. Anyway, do you want to have a little guess as to what Mr. 44, almost 45-year-old Joe Achilles would cost on a motorbike, albeit a 22 grand bike? I live in a nice area. It would be garage, obviously.
See, now, because you're not going to be doing gigantic miles and stuff, my gut feel would be, it's probably going to be more than I think, but like, I don't know, a grand?
Well, I in my head, I was like,
maybe not even that.
In my head, I was like, I would pay up to 1,600, maybe 2 grand.
Yeah.
Well, firstly, it came back with nobody wanted to even insure me. And then I got one that was just, it was 5,800 and something pounds.
Wow.
And I was made to feel lucky that I even got that quote. And I mean, it comes down to two things. Number one, bike insurance has gone through the roof, just like car insurance and every insurance. And number two is I've only had my license for 18 months and I don't have any no claims as a result because I've only ridden press bikes. So even though I've got a very clean driving license, I've been driving for over 20 years and that doesn't really count for you.
Wow.
So I'm going to have to, bite my lip and just drag it on a bit longer. Maybe in July I'll have my license 2 years, I'll get something a bit cheaper.
Yeah.
But it's a shame because my dreams have kind of been crushed because I would have just, you know, definitely taken that bike away again this year. But there you go. So if you're looking at motorbike, I encourage it all the time. I think especially as an older person, go out and learn how to ride one properly at something like BMW Rider Training. But bear in mind that, if you want insurance on anything that's a bit special, a bit tasty, maybe you can have to wait a little bit longer unless you've got loads of disposable cash. Yeah.
Wowzers.
Yeah.
Blimey. It's quite depressing, really.
It is. It is.
Well, for you.
Well, I worked out the month that, so if I'd broken the insurance, and I wouldn't, I would always, because insurance, if you break it under month, you usually get stung with high APR and stuff. But if I'd paid it in one lump sum of 6 odd grand, and I broke it was 500-ish quid a month, which was what, 2.5 times the amount I'd be paying for the bike itself to insure it. And when you look at it like that, you're like, and then it becomes...
And that's not something you're going to use every day. You might use it, I don't know, 2 or 3 times a month.
Yeah, exactly. 2 or 3 times a month in the summer months.
So if you then work it out, can you imagine doing a use basis on a cost per mile basis?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
And that's why it all comes back down to, bikes are... In the majority of cases, a luxury, especially I think for us petrol heads who have got cars, it is a luxury, really is a luxury tool. So Neil, Motorad, BMW UK, if you're listening, I might be begging you for another long-termer.
Yeah, get Joe a long-termer, or if there's an insurance company watching that wants to insure Joe.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Hey, now question. So I thought this podcast we'd talk, I've rocked up in a Lotus today and the other thing that made me think about this as a topic was MG being the central feature at Festival of Speed this year. And then I was on a press trip recently with people from all over the world. And I think the question I got asked most was, what cars do you make in Britain anymore? Or, are there any British cars anymore? And it got me thinking about British car brands.
Yep.
And are they British anymore? Does it really matter who owns them? And what's the future look like for them? Because I guess if we start with Lotus, because I've rocked up in a Lotus.
Yep.
Clearly, well-known British car brand based in Norfolk. Well-known for their lightweight sports cars. They've made some of the most iconic sports cars of the last, I'm not even going to say 50 years, probably a bit more than that now.
Yep.
They've got some amazing, amazing cars.
Yep.
From Esprits and...
Elan
and Europa. And,
Elise.
Oh, Elise, all of them. And now... their current range, they've got the Amira, which I'm in, which is their only combustion car.
Yep.
And then everything else is going electric with Electra and their new Emeya, which is their new one, which that you can't order yet, but they've announced it. And I thought it'd be quite interesting to go through a few brands and have a chat about what you think.
Yeah, sure.
Because obviously, well, Lotus now owned by Geely Group, by Chinese. So what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Because we might have to talk about electric a little bit.
Yes.
Are you feeling okay?
Obviously, we are going to have to. I think British cars, in our lifetime anyway, on the whole, have been a bit of a depressing subject, in my opinion. They've made some... I think there's some really, which we'll get onto, there's some really cool boutique, let's call them, sports car brands, which have always...
Fred in the Shed,
which have always have been... awesome, fun driver's cars where they're never out to take on the world, are they? They're never going to be a mass production. I think, and Lotus is an interesting one because, again, they are one of those brands that have always been there. People appreciate Lotus when it's worked.
Yeah.
Because Lotus does stand for lots of trouble, usually serious. and when they have worked, they're fantastically engineered, brilliant, fun, fast cars.
Yeah.
But driver involvement, aren't they? They're just great.
To drive. I mean, to put this down, now I drove it up today, to stick it down a country road, you can feel the lightness straight away. You know, this, especially in today's world where most cars you're driving are, you know, at least getting on for a couple of tons, the bigger ones, maybe more than that. But when you're driving a car that's lightweight, you chuck into a corner, you can just feel it straight away.
Yep.
And the thing that I like about the Amira now is, I mean, Lotus have done that for a long time, but I think even a hardcore Lotus fan, when I bought my Boxster, I had the offer of one of the last Exiges from Hendy, and it was a mega bit of kit. But it wouldn't be a car you drive every day. I mean, they're big sills, difficult to get into. Not a great deal of kind of comfort inside. I mean, perfect driver's car, amazing track day car, but not a car you drive every day. Not a car that made you cosseted in luxury. Whereas actually the Amira, the interior is lovely. And you know, it's easy to get in and out of. It's not got the most amount of stowage ever, but...
So it's a big step on though, isn't it?
It's come on a lot, huge amount. And then when you do get into their electric range, so Amira Electra, I had that last year, and that's a phenomenal car. Put to one side, it's a 2.6-ton all-electric SUV. It's beautifully appointed inside. Really lovely place to be. So they have kind of stepped on their proposition in terms of it's now a car for not just a specialist enthusiast market. They're going for more mass market. Let's face it, that's what SUVs are for, right?
Yep.
But they do have this shackleless, this reputation for poor build quality and poor reliability.
Yeah, it's, I mean, obviously we've got to be, you know, relatively careful about what we say, but I mean, people that I've spoke to that have either owned the Amira or still own the Amira, in fact, everyone I know with one has had issues with them. Dealer, you know, it's at the dealer a lot, getting this, that, and everything else replaced. But still, I think they're a lot more reliable than the older ones. I think it's really difficult. I kind of... A bit like we've talked about with Porsche recently, you know, we kind of feel a bit sorry for Porsche with like the new Macan, the electric Macan, and the way they're they're being forced into one direction, and they've acted on that and brought out this new car that neither of us has driven yet, but I'm sure it's going to be brilliant.
Yeah.
But it's almost a bit early, whatever. Lotus is reborn with a brilliant product that is now available in two different, very different guises, I guess, with the 2-litre AMG automatic, you know, suits. One of the best looking cars on the planet.
Yeah.
And I know off camera you said you've been stopped for photos in it and everything.
I've never had a car like it. I've only had it a week.
Yeah. And Ped's like, oh, right, do you watch the channel? It's like, oh, no, we don't know who you are. We just got a picture of the car. No, he's joking. So you got that one hand, and then you've got the other hand is they're having to build, you know, this big, what's it called? Electra.
Electra is the SUV.
Yep.
And then they've got a Mayer and a Via.
A Mayer and a Via. I mean, I think it's going to be very difficult for them, because I think in the electric, from what I can see with the way the electric market's going, Tesla are always going to do well unless they do something fundamentally wrong in the EV world, because they're well ahead of everyone.
Yep.
Charging infrastructure, we talk about it all the time. So put them aside. We've then got the Chinese brands that are popping up and cropping up everywhere.
Yep.
I know you've got a BYD at the moment.
It's
really good.
It's really, really good.
At 45 grand, which is still a lot of money, but in today's world, it's actually not. And it comes with everything. So you've got the Chinese market, which is coming on so quickly, and there's a new brand popping up every month. So you've got those guys. I think the Germans... the premium Germans are going to struggle to a point, because there's going to be a lot of people that's just going to be like, well, if I want a car that's just getting me from A to B and I've lost that sort of emotional and soul, then why am I going to spend twice on a German brand or three times on a German brand? And then you've got the likes of Lotus, which is kind of a bit of a bit of a left field choice, isn't it?
It's a British brand, but it's a Chinese technology.
British brand, but I'm sure it's fast and it's capable, but you're not... Your Lotus customer, it's not going to appeal. I can't see how that. It's almost like the least Lotus car ever. So I can't see a Lotus hardcore customer going, oh yeah, I want one of those because it's got a Lotus badge in it. They almost want to go the other way and go, oh, I'm not having that. That's just not Lotus.
I mean, I think the problem with Lotus, you know, you might well have this romantic vision of Lotus. Is it Lotai? What's the plural of Lotuses?
I don't know.
But when they just had Exige and Elise, they were selling, you know, not that many, like maybe 1,000 cars a year. It wasn't big numbers at all.
No.
So Amira's been super important for them, and I'm sure the electric ones will be. What about, I mean, let's go on to MG then, because we're talking about the Chinese.
Your favourite. I mean,
that probably of all of them, that's the one that's upset most people. But actually, if you think about MG as a brand, we have this romantic vision of MGB GTs and midgets and stuff.
You have that romantic vision.
All right, okay. Yeah. Somewhat my age, my vintage.
My mum used to go on about MGs.
So they had those little sports cars from the kind of tail end of the war, and, you know, Morris garages back in the day.
Yep.
And then, you know, I think people forget what happened to the MG brand during the 80s and 90s. With things like, well, Montego and Maestro,
yep.
MGs and MG Metro. And then they did those awful things with the Rover 200 and 400s, the ZTR and whatever they were called.
Yep.
So it's not like they've got the best reputation for... And then they had the MGF, which looked cool, but just terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, I'm sorry. Any
a tiny little thing as well.
I mean, they look really nice. Yeah. And at one point, I remember when they launched, I thought, wow, that's a really cool car. And then you know, you drive one and think, not really.
Yeah.
So when they were bought out by Chinese investment and they've used the MG badge, heaven forbid, on all electric cars, and they're kind of, to start with, they didn't really leverage the MG bit of it. They just used it as a brand. But the fact they've now got their new Cyberster,
yep,
which has a 100th anniversary edition.
It hasn't even really launched yet, has it?
Well, no, but MG's been around 100 years.
Yeah.
So they're now starting to leverage the heritage of the MG brand, which is really, really upsetting some people.
Yeah.
So is that still a British brand, or is it just a Chinese brand and they've kind of just stuck an MG badge on it?
It's a Chinese brand just piggybacking MG, which, I mean, in my own head, it's just a bizarre decision, because there must be other brands out there that are better to piggyback on. But I guess the heritage...
They do actually make some quite good cars. MG4 is a really good car.
But do you know what? For my okay, so for
it's
me,
electric though, Joe. Sorry.
No, yeah, it's electric. But you know, listen, we've talked about that car being very good value, and I've heard that from a few people as well. I think what would stop, and this is me, in my opinion, what would stop me buying an MG4?
Yeah.
What would stop me buying an MG4 if I was in that part of the market and it's a brilliant car for the money?
Given up on life.
Yeah. And I'd given up on life and I'd changed my perspective and I genuinely thought they were saving the planet. Wow, this is really out there.
Wow. Come on, Joe. Go for it, mate. Go for it.
What would make me, what would prevent me from buying one is the fact that it's got an MG badge on it. So I know that sounds ridiculous, but I just, in my head, it's such a, in my lifetime anyway, it's been such a rubbish brand that I just couldn't, I don't care if you tell me it was the best thing in the world. It's like, it's got an MG badge on it. So I really struggle to understand why you would almost brag or use that. Why not just start, like BYD, just start something completely new,
yeah,
from the ground up. That's my take on it, and yeah, I guess that sums up a lot of the British car history. It'd be like putting a Leyland badge on it or something, you know, like,
yeah.
So yeah, anyway, that's I'm sure there's going to be people attacking me in the comments, and but that's just me being honest.
Okay, so that's MG. I knew this was going to be a great subject. Now we're going to go to Gaydon and we're going to chat Aston Martin.
Yep. Yep.
Okay, so Aston Martin, you know, iconic British car brand,
amazing AMGs.
If you think about some of the cars that Aston have made, you go back to, you know, your DB5 for, yep, James Bond, or, you know, for me, I love some of the stuff they did in the 70s. They're probably terrible cars, but, you know, big Vantages and all that. Yeah, they just look wicked.
Yep.
And then they got acquired by Ford, I think, to start with, didn't they? And
yep,
that was in the realms of like DB9, probably. I'm not the most...
DB7.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Yep.
So straight away, it's now...
And 9.
...part of Ford, so it's not British car brand anymore.
Yep.
And now it's owned by an American billionaire.
Yes.
And a few other people.
It was Ford, and then they had a strange partnership with Volvo, and I don't know if that was just parts, but there was something going on there.
Oh, yeah, because they got their sat-nav. I mean, let's partner with... really good sat nav maker, Volvo, and put Volvo sat nav in Advantage.
Aston, it's a difficult one, isn't it? There was a really nice, what was that out there?
That's a DBX Superleggera. DBS Superleggera. Yeah.
Superleggera, yeah.
With terrible tire writing on it.
Yes, yeah. I like the car, but yeah, I would say no more.
Yeah.
While we're on that, actually, I don't think we did a big shout out, but our headline sponsor, just in case you might have missed.
I don't know whether people would have spotted that, do you think?
Well, I don't know. Are we sponsored by Michelin?
I think so, yeah.
But big shout out, as always, to Michelin. So I think Aston's I always look at and I admire, and I don't know, there's like you said, from the 70s, 80s, they're just cool. That they make great noises. Oh, it's another adventure bike.
KTM,
that's really cool. nice helmet as well. Wait a second. No, it's not. That looks a bit like Baron's helmet, but it's not. That would be bizarre. So Aston's, they look cool. They sound cool. They've got that James Bond thing, which I think's always done them favours over the years. I've always thought, you know, you turn up to, let's say, I don't know, Café de Paris in Monaco or something, or Hotel de Paris, rather. I think turning up in a Ferrari anywhere, I'd feel like a bit of a... turning up in a Porsche to a place like that, you'd kind of, it's just like a Volkswagen Golf. But turning up in an Aston to a place like that, or you're going to Buckingham Palace to get your OBE or what, just somewhere, you turn up in Aston and it's just cool. And I'm never, that doesn't change to me. That's about as cool as, but then it's the, would I ever own one? Would I ever part with my hard earned cash? Or would I at the last minute go, no, I'm going to go and buy a 911, or I'm going to go and buy a, well, these days you can compare the prices to Ferrari and whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that's always been, especially very recently with the new, how much is a new Vantage? 150 upwards or something? 160?
Well, the new one, they're considering it's the entry level car, they're like 140 or 50. They're a lot of money.
Yeah. I mean,
they're apparent by all accounts, I've not driven the new Vantage. The old one was good enough.
But, yep.
But yeah, I know what you mean. They are, they are. So there's something very special about it. Mutual friend Andrew from Farncombe. He had a V8 Vantage manual.
Yep.
The first shape.
Sure.
The previous one.
Like 2007 or
yeah.
something.
Yeah. And then he's just gone V12 Vantage S, and I'm so jealous. It's so nice.
Yep.
It's like China grey, ceramics brakes, beautiful spec.
Yep.
I think it was like 80 grand.
See, that appeals to me.
It's a lot of car.
It's a lot of car.
And it's got a decat as well. It sounds amazing.
It's a lot of car, a lot of engine. I think they're all styled brilliantly. They all look fantastic. I'm not a fan of DBX. I think that's got panel gaps that definitely rival Tesla. And I think it's overpriced. But anyway, people say it's good. So. But the sports cars, I think they're all styled really well. That's one of my favourite Astons of all time. I think it's
one of the best looking cars ever made.
Yeah,
that Vantage was just beautiful. It's just there's not an ugly angle to it.
No, and the V12's got like vents in the bonnet,
it's
a few little
louvers,
That's very cool.
I think the infotainment inside's a bit shocking. Yeah. I mean, but you can get a CarPlay upgrade and stuff now, yep. So it makes it a little bit more livable with.
Yeah.
Even though you and Becky did refer to it as a Fisher-Price roller skate in the last episode.
Listen, Tim's GT8 is a bit GT8. Like that. Yeah,
I think GT8 seen some... or GT12. Have you driven a GT12?
No, never. Mate. No, that looks amazing. Yeah,
awesome.
I'm sure. Listen, I've seen some other spec GT8s, and look, obviously Tim's a good friend of all of ours, and we've had him on the pod. He was one of the first people, which was great, and I'm hopefully get him back again.
Yeah.
I don't know after all these comments.
I don't know. If you keep going, depends what you're about to say.
No, but I think, and I have to say, you know, over the years, Tim, some of his choices, car choices and spec choices, let's face it, he's bought more supercars and high-end sports cars than you and I have had hot dinners, probably, but... So there's always going to be a few dud ones in there. And I think the GT8 for me, I was like, bold, brave, but just not for me.
Yeah. So here's the thing, though. So with this all-electric future, whether we agree with it or not, the one thing you can't deny is that it's there at the moment and that's the way we're going. And
sure.
The policymakers have made it so.
Yeah.
What does that... Where does that leave Aston? Because, you know, at the moment, they don't have an electric... The only... I guess the... Unless you go Valkyrie, which is hybrid.
Here's
your £3 million hybrid.
Yeah.
I really worry for Aston Martin for the longevity of them as a brand. I think at the moment they're sticking with V12 and V8 cars and that's the way they're going. But I do, for a brand that is, we've just waxed lyrical about it for 5 minutes and most of that was about the amazing sound and the amazing looks of the car. Well, if you take the sound away, for me, an Aston Martin, there's like 80% of the car is what noise it makes. And if it's an electric platform, it ain't going to make that noise. And that I really do worry for them.
Again, it's a similar problem to what we just talked about, Lotus. Lotus, why do you buy a Lotus? Because it's lightweight and it's a driver-focused car. So yeah. then you've got this big whale that's turned up. And the same with the Aston, exactly right with Astons. The only reason you're going to buy an Aston is because you expect it's like the C63 at the moment, this four cylinder thing that hasn't sold. Don't believe Mercedes if they say that.
Four cylinder. I like four cylinder.
Yeah. Well, yes, yeah. But at least Porsche has got a bit of a four cylinder heritage. I think it's like the minute you strip that V8 away, and that's still combustion engine, obviously, and four cylinder hybrid. Nobody was interested, and I think it's going to be hard. But let's face it, Aston don't sell that many cars anyway.
That's probably why they're getting away with it, to be honest, because they're such low volume. But
yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. I do. Obviously, Aston. I support Aston in the F1 because of Alonso, and I love the fact that they're starting to do well, and he's re-signed. They've obviously got this big bank account to rely on with Lawrence, and
that's the. The only saving grace is they've got the financial backing. As long as, you know, while Lawrence is happy to play with his train set, that's fine. But when he gets bored of it, that's the bit that would worry me.
Yeah, where do they... I can't see how they get back any revenue anywhere.
I don't think he really cares. He's got that much money. I'm segueing now. So we've done MG and Lotus and Aston.
Yeah.
So if we're talking about F1,
yep,
we've got to have a chat about McLaren.
Yes.
So McLaren.
Yep.
I mean, well, British car brand, although they started by a Kiwi, but always been based in the UK, based in Woking. Now owned by the Bahrainis.
Yep.
So again, it's another brand that, if you look at the parent company or where the money's coming from, it's not UK based. I don't think I make any secret of it. I absolutely love McLaren cars. I some of the best cars I've ever driven have been McLaren.
Yep.
If I won the lottery tomorrow and I had money, enough money to buy a supercar, it would be a McLaren.
Yep.
And without even thinking about it. They are also a company that's plagued with the whole reliability thing. Although I was going to say something when you were talking about the Lotus thing. I'm pretty sure no matter what brand you make a video on and stick it on YouTube, you will have people say, my mate had one of them. It was always in the garage. I think all cars and all brands have.
Yep.
You know, someone never goes, I had one of those, ran for 6 years, never a problem.
No.
It's only the bad news that comes out. So
yeah.
I'm pretty sure there are plenty of Lotus owners or McLaren owners. I've got a mate of mine who's got a 675 LT and he's never had a problem with it.
Yeah.
And he knows plenty of people in the owners group and never had a problem with it. So he's always wanted to defend them as a business, but they do have an issue with perception, I think.
Mm.
And I think my worry for McLaren is with Artura. Have you driven Artura?
I haven't, no.
What a car. I mean, if you compare it with the 296 GTB Ferrari, which
yeah.
they're both, you know, like V8 hybrid drivetrain.
Yeah.
The Ferrari's like 100 grand or so more expensive. Artura is an amazing car.
Yeah.
But they've had so many problems with it.
Well, yes. Yeah, this is, I mean, I'm sure, I think McLaren have got the Monday or Friday car problem. Like some, I also know some owners that love them. I think Tim's 675, Tim's had a lot of issues with some of his cars and
yeah.
keeps some of it ash and some of it. But his 675, I think, has been very, very reliable.
Well, you spent time in that.
Spent a lot of time in it.
They're great, aren't they?
Great. And I think that's one of the best cars they ever built.
Yeah,
Looks-wise,
yeah.
performance-wise, just fantastic, yeah. timeless. But I know categorically, because I've seen it on tours, some of their cars are just
fall apart.
So badly built. And I think when you're spending that kind of money, but it isn't. And also, I've spoke to people that either work there or have worked there and, you know, behind the scenes. And I know for a fact that when they're signing off a car, if their marketing team want it out tomorrow and it's only 80% finished, it's going out tomorrow. So they are literally ransomed and forced to put these products out the door, even knowing that there's issues with them. And I think the Artura thing's an interesting one because I talk about this a lot. Well, not a lot, but I what I've realized over the last couple of years especially is a lot of these big magazine publications or these old school places that we go to for knowledge and reviews on cars, there's some amazing journalists out there, amazing. But a lot of what you read...
Here we go, incoming joke.
I wouldn't say isn't always honest. And there's a reason for that. A lot of these publications are heavily sponsored by manufacturers, so they're very careful what they say. But I know, and I'm not going to throw any names under the bus because I'd never do that, but I remember the Artura. So when they originally were going to launch that car, they had a massive press launch. I think it was in Spain somewhere.
Oh, was that when lots of them caught fire?
Yeah, they all went up in flames. And so that original, and this was years ago,
yep.
they had to end up cancelling and quashing that. And then I think it then took over a year until they had another one. They still had some problems on that. But those journos, obviously, they're probably all underwritten, whatever. But that's never talked about. And customer cars were pushed out just after that. And I'm sure a lot of them have had to come back. And I think that, in a nutshell, is McLaren's biggest problem is it's really hard for someone like McLaren to be kind of, let's say, reborn with the 12C MP4 12C, I think it was originally. Yeah. Against the big giants like Ferrari, Porsche and stuff. And from day one, they have produced amazing sports yep. cars, but they have had quality issues. And I think they're chasing too many models. They pushed out too much stuff. They've also upset, I think, a lot of collectors or people that are loyal to the brand, because you go out and you buy your 12C and then next week there's a 650 and then there's a 675 and you're just like, well, wait a second, my car that was a limited edition is now worth nothing. They went through big discount years, didn't they? Finance. You could buy a 600 LT for £600 a month a couple of years ago with a hefty deposit.
Yeah.
But still, it's like it kind of undervalued the brand. It got sales up, but it was a fake. It was kind of like a, fake economy.
It's a real challenge because I know they used to, they went through a problem where they're just making loads of cars and you go and buy a new McLaren and it would have been sat in a car park somewhere for 12 months before it got delivered. And then when Artura came along, they said, we're not going to do that anymore. We'll only make cars to order.
Yep.
And we'll get rid of that. And I get frustrated to see, because their cars are so good. I drove the 750S recently. What a car. I mean, seriously, just an exceptionally good car.
Yeah.
And I know it's an evolution of 720S, which was a good car anyway. But they are amazing cars. And if they could get it right, if they could get everything right, then I just, the world is their oyster, really, because, but it's just that, and now it's, whether it's a right or not, it's that perception thing. Mm. And, you know, they're an expensive purchase, but God, do they make good cars. And I wish all the best for McLaren, because they're one of my favourite car brands. They make some of my favourite cars.
Yep.
But, you know, that frustrates me. And hopefully with the investment from, you know, new ownership and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's not like they haven't got a will to make it better. But yeah, we'll see.
I think they're a good, out of all the British brands we're probably going to speak about today, I think I would love to have something like a 600LT or whatever.
Oh, 600LT, yeah.
Yeah, it just...
Spider.
Fantastic. I think they're, like you said, they're brilliant products. They've been plagued with reliability issues and a few pushing out the door before they're ready issues. But again, it's going to be difficult for them with the future. You know, which way are they going to go? And just touching on where we started with McLaren, the F1 team's going in the right direction.
Yeah.
They've got two brilliant drivers. Yeah. I think Oscar Lando, we know is a future world champion. And Oscar's the first driver that's been put against Lando in a while. He's there all the time. Yeah, so I think the F1 side of things is going well. So yeah, I wish McLaren well. And I really, you know, let's see what the future is with them. And even though they're owned by someone else, they're not British owned, they are still built down the road in Woking.
Yeah.
I'd still class them as very British.
Yeah.
Kiwi.
Okay. Brand. So next brand built down the road from me. Rolls Royce.
Oh, of course. Yes.
Perhaps of the course. Most.
Literally down
the
road.
literally down is like 5 miles away. Probably, I mean, talk about iconic British car brand.
Yep.
Rolls Royce.
Yep.
German.
Yes.
But for me, this is a really interesting one because I think actually German ownership has made Rolls-Royce the company they are today.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's everything from the manufacturing design process. They're not my bag. I'm not, you know, I said about if I won the lottery, I'd go and buy a McLaren.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go and buy a Rolls-Royce. There's a very specific clientele for Rolls-Royce.
Yep.
Have you driven many Rolls-Royce?
Yeah. During my chauffeur days. Yeah. HRO and in Berkeley Square used to throw me cars quite regularly. So yeah. I spent a lot of time in it.
I mean, the one thing that will... I guess you've got to be quite lucky to either be a passenger in a Rolls-Royce or get to drive one. When you get to drive one, though, the thing that surprised... They are fast.
Yeah.
They are really actually quite good to drive. Even though they weigh the same as a small moon.
Yep.
They are amazing things. Cullinan, I don't understand how Cullinan can be that fast. It might look like a big London taxi, but
yes.
But they are amazing.
Wait, we agree on something.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the Cullinan.
No. But
inside, amazing. Yeah. I guess you don't see from the outside. But so they're a great example of a British brand that are doing amazing things. I mean, I live 5 miles from the Goodwood factory, and you see all the cars. They all do their final test drives on routes around near my house, so you see them out on the road all the time.
Yep.
And they're incredible. They've done amazing things.
Yep.
But you know, another British brand that's owned by someone else,
owned by the Germans. Yeah, I think I have to agree, and I'm not just BMW fanboying, but I think it was a good partnership. I think it's been good for them. Who knows where they would have been without them. I think they've got to, they're not, even though they sell decent numbers, I'm sure they're not mass production, are they? No. And in order to do what they do, They need to share a lot of components, electrical and stuff. And you get in a Rolls, especially if you're familiar with current BMWs.
7 Series.
Yeah, 7 Series. Especially now, in fact, the new 7 and the Rolls, they share so many parts.
I think it's cross-fertilized, though. There's some Rolls come down into 7 Series.
That's right. Yeah. And when you see, when I was in Austria last year, and Lou and I saw some new 7s, I think they were facelifting camo. And honestly, because they were in camo, you couldn't, and no badges, it literally could have been a Rolls Royce. You know, like you could just see the Rolls. And so now they're really merging into one. But I think I was lucky enough to run quite a few, back in 2014, 15, 16, 17, at fashion weeks and stuff. And it's the sort of car you get in at first, you know, like, for me, BMW buttons everywhere. It's just an overpriced BMW. Day two, you're like, wow, this thing's comfortable. Day three, you're just like, oh my God, everything is calibrated so well.
Yeah.
By the end of the week, you really don't want to give it back because everything from the throttle calibration, even though it's a BMW throttle pedal, to the brake, the way it slows down, to the ride quality and the stabilizer, everything, you just start to go, okay, I can see after a week with it, you're like, I can see where every single penny's gone into this car. And it differentiates itself even from something like a 7 Series, which is a brilliant car. I got back into my wonderful 7 Series and you're like, oh, it doesn't, it's not, you know, I don't feel like, quite the level of luxury and quality. So it'll be interesting again to see where they go. I think with their electric.
Well, the Spectre, I was going to say they transitioned into electric.
Yep.
Really quite well.
Yeah.
And I've not driven it yet. I nearly drove it the media day the other week. But by all accounts, I've only heard good things about it.
I think, well, if you think about it, although we look at Rolls and we're like, oh, they've got that lovely V12 and stuff. Again, going back to the time I've spent in them, you never hear that V12 ever. You know, the whole balancing the coin on the top of the engine, there's no vibrations, there's no noise. So
you know the story about, so the current version of Phantom, when that was just before it was launched, they'd done loads of noise cancellation stuff in there. They got foam filled tires and it was super quiet, and they finished it, and then they took the CEO out for a drive, and he's going along and said, oh, listen how quiet it is. And he went, what's that noise? They went, what do you mean noise? I can hear something. And it was the air conditioning, right? And they went, that's too noisy. So they sent them back. They had to redesign the air conditioning because now you could hear the air conditioning over the engine. It was that quiet. So, yeah, it makes absolute logical sense. And if you think about, I guess, a lot of London-based chauffeuring, you're probably not doing massive amounts of miles anyway.
No.
So actually being in an electric platform is probably, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
So for me, Rolls-Royce, I think they're kind of dealing with it quite well. The next one then, similar type of company. Now we're going to go up north to Crewe.
Oh,
that's a bit nice. Yeah, Merrill 4 GTS. Come on. So we're going to go to Crewe now.
Yep. Okay. Bentley. Yes.
So Bentleys aren't my thing either.
Yeah.
Just going to back that there and just leave it. 992 Carrera 4 GTS. Is that?
Very nice.
That's crayon, I reckon, isn't it?
Yeah, crayon, center lock wheels.
Yeah, very nice.
Yeah.
I'm really bunged up at the moment, by the way, so apologies
for
that.
I was going to ask you about your health.
I've got it.
Yeah. I feel bad now because you kept asking me about my health.
I've been ill for 4 weeks, but don't worry, Joe.
No, you'll be all right.
You don't have to. So Bentley. Bentley's, I've driven a few. I've not driven I have driven Bentayga, actually. Bentayga and Continental. Amazing cars to drive.
Yep.
They're a bit bling for me, I think. But I worry a bit about Bentley for a similar reason to I worry about Aston Martin, actually, because they are quite known for their sort of, you know, big V8, V12 type vehicles.
Yep.
But they do really, really well in China, and that's, you know, that market, that's where a lot of that, you know, the big 4x4, the Cullinan does really well there. Bentayga does really well there. They can't make Bentaygas fast enough.
No. And that's the thing, isn't it? Like, it's all very well sitting here in the UK talking about what we see. But there are markets like China, Middle East, America, these huge markets which make, like, really, they don't care too much about... They do. That's not fair, but as in, you've got to prioritize the big markets because that's where the money's made.
Yeah,
Bentley's, I don't know. I can always...
Again, foreign-owned.
Foreign-owned. I can appreciate a Bentley. And I know, they're tied in with Audi, aren't they? They're part of the Volkswagen. But I can appreciate Bentleys. I haven't driven... Unfortunately, my Instagram account is far too organic to get invited to any Bentley UK drives. They seem to just invite frauds along. So I haven't driven any of their current stuff. But I can appreciate it. But I like the V8 Bentayga because it's essentially the RS6 engine.
Yeah.
And I love seeing them. The more current Bentayga, I think the early ones were quite ugly at the time. And now when you see them, they're like, it's like the original Continental GT. Although the Continental GT now, for you can pick up like half decent ones for 20 odd grand or something.
But. Yeah, but you'd need that a year just to put fuel in. They are desperately thirsty.
I can imagine. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch Bentley. I think they do make interesting cars, but I'm with you. None of them really shout out to me. None of them massively appeal to me, but I can appreciate what they are. And I think a Bentayga, we know it's on a good platform that's shared with the KN and the Audi, whatever they call it these days. I mean, Audi change their naming every week. it's a good car. It's going to be an interesting company, but I think you're right. They're going to struggle more than the likes of Rolls-Royce to electrify everything. And it's going to be interesting to see which direction they go.
One thing I would say, I'm a bit of a fan of doing factory tours of car plants. I love going around car factories. The Bentley one is it's highly recommended.
Yep.
The craftsmanship and the level of skill and quality and stuff is amazing. So they do make amazing vehicles. But yeah, I do worry a bit for them going forward.
Yeah.
I reckon we go to Luton next.
Luton. Wait, don't tell me. One second. I should know this. Luton. Luton. Evolve Automotive.
Shout out to Imran and Bilal.
No, I don't.
Vauxhall.
Of course. Yes. Yeah. Luton Airport, basically.
Luton. Oh, God, now you're showing your age. Yeah. Old Lorraine Kelly. Yeah. Not Lorraine Kelly. Luton Airport. What was her name? Lorraine Chase.
That went straight over my head.
Yeah, that'll definitely be too old for you. Sorry. So Vauxhall, and the reason I mentioned these guys is because I had a Vauxhall long-term up until Monday this week.
Yep.
I think good news and bad news. I think back in the day, Vauxhall made some wicked cars. Like, you know, Mark 1 and Mark 2 Astras and GTEs and Cavalier GSIs.
Tony Lewis is like...
And then one of my favourite, remember the Calibra?
Yes.
Yeah, they
were Calibra, really 4x4 turbo.
Mega things. And then they made all these really cool cars, and then even little courses and stuff. They made some really nice track focused ones of those.
Yeah.
And then it all went a bit Pete Tong for a few years, in my view. And now it's kind of styling wise, I think their new design language is quite nice. The challenge is a lot of that is electrified. So I had the electric Astra, which actually was a much better car than I thought it was going to be.
Yep.
My worry for Vauxhall, bearing in mind the whole premise of this chat is who owns the company. Vauxhall are now part of the Stellantis group.
Yep.
And my worry is, and I mentioned this in the video I did on my kind of long term, is when you sit in a Vauxhall now, if you covered up the badge on the steering wheel, you'd be hard pushed to tell what you were sat in, because the switch gear is exactly the same as the Peugeot I had the week before.
Right.
So I know that these brands, you know, I think having a parent company is one thing, especially if they've got money.
Yeah.
But when you have a parent group, you were just talking about Bentley sharing platforms with Audi and Porsche.
Yeah.
Or we're talking about Rolls-Royce sharing platform with BMW. That can be positive.
Yep.
And positive, we talked about how that did good things for Rolls-Royce. The downside is... you can lose some of that brand identity if you're not careful.
Yep.
Because everything looks the same. And I think there's a problem with a lot of car manufacturers. They're just making, you know, cookie cutter cars that all look the bloody same now anyway.
Yeah.
But I just think you're losing some of that individuality. And for me, that's where Vauxhall are at the moment, is the interiors are nice. There's nothing wrong with them, but there's nothing Vauxhall about them. There's nothing special about them.
You mean everything works? And
Well, it did work, to be fair.
Yeah. No, but it's you're right. Because, yeah, like, Rolls-Royce, BMW are, like, you know, up here. Rolls-Royce are up the top. They are super luxury, one of the best car brands in the world, if not the... And the same with Bentley. That somehow still fits into the massive Volkswagen group.
Yeah.
You know, you've got, even with cars like Lamborghini, there's still Bentley's that luxury, sort of premium, comfortable, handmade interior.
Yeah.
That still fits in there. But as you say, with a Vauxhall... And then there's going to be a Peugeot, what would it be? I don't know, 2030 something. That's going to be exactly the same interior, exactly the same price, just a different badge, as you say, with slightly different styling. So then you're like, and they've both got electric motor. They both feel the same to drive. And it's like...
I mean, I did have some comments. A few people said, you're only seeing that because you jump in and out of so many cars. You get to see them all, and then you therefore spot these things.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you only went to test drive a Vauxhall, you wouldn't know. But then you jump in something like, I don't know, the new Renault 5 or the new Mini, and you sit and go, this is a different interior. It's funny, Kia has just driven past. Kia's just gone past. Kia and Hyundai have the same problem for me because they have the same infotainment system. So there's lots of overlap, and I understand why brands do it because of economies of scale, and it helps them bring the price of cars down. Not that you'd spot that from the sticker price on most cars these
days.
But yeah, so Vauxhall's an interesting one. I think there's some positive stuff. I think the cars look better than they have done for a long time, but I just think they need to be managing that Stellantis thing. Now, I'm conscious of time. The last bit of car that the car makers I think we should talk about are Fred's in sheds.
Yes,
because we're really good at that here in the UK.
We are.
Whether that's, I guess we could start with someone like Caterham. We'll run through them quickly. SQ3 just got past, very
nice.
Caterham. Now, obviously, they've had a model of car pretty much for the last 50 years or whatever it is.
Yep.
But they've got Anthony Gianarelli now has come in, and he's got the new Project V, which is their all-electric thing. Looks beautiful. They don't make it yet. So they're starting to evolve a little bit, but very low manufacture.
Yep.
But then you've got people like BAC.
Yep.
Making them. Have you driven a mono?
I haven't, no. I don't think I'd fit. I don't think I'd fit.
I don't know, but I'd give it a go. Shoehorn me in.
Yeah.
And then Ariel.
Yeah, Ariel. Yeah. And Morgan as well, and actually.
Morgan, yeah. Sure. Talk about car making that's been around a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're all very cool, very driver-focused brands, manufacturers, that you get the sense that, you know, when you're in one, you're like, a lot of it was hand-built, or there's a lot of care and time gone into each one. I love them all. I haven't driven them all, but I know I'd love a BAC. I haven't driven a Morgan even, but I know to Pete from Petrohead Tours, he's got one and he loves his.
Yeah.
In fact, they run BMW engines in, I think, a couple of them.
Well, they do. Yeah. In fact, the plus... Pete's got a plus six, I think.
I think so, yeah. It's B58,
but it's the only problem with that is it comes with the flappy paddle gearbox.
Oh, yes.
And you're like, that... When I drove it, I'm like, no, in my head, I'm in a Morgan. I want to change it. I want three pedals and a gear select. I don't want to be flappy paddling.
Yeah.
But amazing car.
Again, it's like, where do they go with what they've got? They're kind of like a smaller scale to Lotus. They haven't, you know, it's like they could just choose to build a big SUV electric car, but that's just not. It's just not.
But it's weird though. Why are we so good at doing it though? Because they're all, you know, I guess if there weren't any good, they probably wouldn't make it past the development stage. But
yeah,
you know, you drive an Ariel Atom or an Ariel Nomad, they are both unreal things to drive. They're just so much fun to drive. Yep. I haven't driven a BAC Mono, but I can imagine it's epic.
Yep.
Morgan's, I forgot totally about Morgan. Beautiful things to drive.
What about Westfield? Where are Westfield?
They've gone bust.
Oh, they've gone, have they? Okay.
Yeah.
They were British.
They were British, yeah.
They were another.
They'd gone bust. I did some work with them with Vintage Voltage 3 years ago, and they had big plans. They were doing some stuff with like semi-autonomous vehicles on the side to try and earn the money to keep the road car business going.
Okay.
But they just had problems with not paying bills and cash flow and stuff.
I suppose they were always in the shadow of Caterham as well, in my opinion. You'd see 10 Caterhams for every one or two Westfields.
They were quite, you know, you mentioned the word Caterham at the Westfield factory to the guy who owns Westfield.
Oh.
And they were quite defensive. You know, they said their cars were better. Because there's other MK sports cars, I think, they do the similar thing.
Yeah.
That Seven style Robin sports cars, they do the same thing. But yeah. Caterham are still always going to be the, for me, having owned one, they're just, you know, I know Becky took the piss out of me for owning one. But
yeah.
They are great cars. You yeah. struggle to fit in one, though.
Yeah, I Caterham, I think, yeah, my knees hit the top of the sort of where the top of the car is because I've got really long legs. Oh, no, I've got short legs. Yeah, anyway.
It's just a massive body and the weight. I mean, yeah. You double the weight of a Caterham instantly.
Yes, yeah.
And then the last one we should mention, TVR.
Oh, TVR. Oh, wow.
What was that? Blackpool, wasn't it? I think. When they
TVR Blackpool.
I don't understand what happened to them, because they used to make some of the most bonkers cars yep. ever.
Cool.
A big V8 with everything else is made of fiberglass.
Yeah.
Just bonkers things.
Yeah.
And I think, and then they kind of went quiet. And then they came back, didn't they? Because they had the new Griffith. And Tim put money down on. I remember it being launched at Revival. And it was there. And it was a big song and dance about it. And then
it's just,
guess what?
Literally gone away in a puff of smoke, isn't it?
Yeah, so I don't know the latest situation, but I'm guessing we're not going to get a new TVR anytime soon.
No. And see, TVR would have been, going back to MG, I know MG used to make more sort of passenger-based cars and not just sports cars.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that would have been, to me, TVR still has a cool ring about it.
Yeah.
We know they were slightly unreliable. They were, you know, a bit left field, but really
Griffith.
Cool.
I mean, come on. They were just like, because they didn't have any. I wouldn't want to, you know, have a knock-in one, because basically the bodywork is one piece of fiberglass. It's going to be really expensive to fix it.
Yeah.
But yeah, Griffith.
No traction. Obviously, no traction control back then. They weighed less than a ton.
Cigaris, I was quite fantastic.
Oh, that looked great, didn't it?
The exhaust that stick out sideways.
Again, Pete Petroet tours, although I think he might have sold it when he got his Morgan, he had a Chimera,
yeah.
I think the 5-liter one. And I followed him back once when I had the Porsche GB GC3 press car.
Yeah.
And we'd been out somewhere filming something. Oh, it might have been that car. Anyway, I remember following him back, and it was rainy. The conditions weren't that great. And I was thinking, oh, okay, we weren't even going above the speed limit. The conditions were really bad.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, I've had enough. And Pete's just disappearing down the road in this little TVR. I was like, mate, you've got talent and, bigger pair than me. But
this story may well get cut from the edit, but we'll see. I watched an interview with the then chairman of TVR. I think it might have been on an old Top Gear or something, a really old one, William Woolard, old.
Yep.
And he was asked why TVR didn't put ABS or traction control in their cars, and the guy's response was, because we make cars for heterosexuals.
No way. Oh my goodness.
Wow. Looking at Pat now.
When was that? That must have been a while back.
Yeah. That was in the days of Griffith and
you're just quoting that. So if it does make it into the edit, you're just quoting something that was said.
But they had no drive rates at all, did they?
Yeah,
and
no.
And, you know, it's another
era. And on that bombshell.
Yeah, probably that's out of time. But I'd love to know, put in the comments what your, I don't know, favourite, most iconic British car brand. We must have missed a few out.
Probably have.
I mean, yeah. I gave it a good old think and tried to come up with as many as we could.
Mini.
Well, yeah. Oh, there's a Mini guy. I can't believe I missed Mini out. Oh, yeah, they're German now.
But then they're still built in Oxford, aren't they?
They are still built in Oxford. oh, no. Oh, I can't believe I missed Mini out.
Oh, my goodness. Maybe we'll have to have another episode talking about Mini. It'd be cool to do a podcast on the Mini factory one day. But,
definitely. But on a serious note, put in the comments below what your favourite British car brand is, apart from Mini. And don't forget to, I should have asked you this right at the beginning, to make sure you subscribe. Follow us on Facebook. Give us a rating. Do
Instagram.
All of
we're almost at 2,000 Instagram followers. So
cool. That's half of what your Black Lab has.
Less than half now. She's at 4.3 or something. Yeah. Oh, mate, and big up yourself on your 1.1 million views on a reel.
Yeah.
That you did. And guess what? It was a really interesting reel. It wasn't one of you being a lifestyle vlogger.
I tell you what, over a million views, and it's gained me like, I don't know, 500. followers. No, 2,500 2,500 followers or something. Yeah, amazing.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to go and blow my nose and let's go get a coffee, shall we?
Yes, mate. Yeah.
See you on the next one.
Thanks for tuning in.
Cheers.